There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, let me talk to you about a couple things. The first being Draft.com. It is a great way to play fantasy sports. Some are new to it, some aren't, but it is a phenomenal site. Draft.com, draft in your app store. They do snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They got PGA, NBA, NHL, NFL, tons and tons of fun. They've even introduced auction-style drafting. So it is a great, great way to play fantasy sports. Go try it out and use promo code SDSports at checkout for entry into a free $3 tournament of your choice. So draft.com, draft in your app store, promo code SDSports for a free $3 entry into a tournament of your choice. TheQuantEdge.com, they're my buddies over there. They do great work. I only promote sites that are for pay that I trust, and I trust TheQuantEdge.com, and I hope you trust them too. They have NFL, they've introduced MMA, they have a betting tool, they have NBA. They're making it all happen over there at TheQuantEdge.com. And right now, for the rest of the football season, they've lowered their price on the full season package to $59.99, which is a great deal because you get a lineup optimizer, you get an injury tool, a head-to-head tool, so much more. You got podcasts, you have articles, all kinds of stuff behind the paywall, and it's $59.99. You listen to Bench with Bubba. You listen to the 2-Point Conversion NFL DFS podcast. You go read the Sports DJs articles. Then you go to thequantedge.com. You use their tools. And you use promo code BENCHED, B-E-N-C-H-E-D right now. And you get $10 off the rest of the season. So when you use code BENCHED, B-E-N-C-H-E-D, at thequantedge.com, you get $10 off and you get the rest of the NFL season for $49.99. So go check them out. Thequantedge.com, promo code BENCHED for $49.99 for the rest of the NFL season. Last but not least, I'd really appreciate it if you can go give a rating and review on iTunes. It really helped me out and get this podcast going bigger and better than ever. But with that being said, welcome to Benched with Bubba, episode 131 with guest Walter McMichael talking some Dynasty Fantasy Baseball. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 131. We're going to talk some fantasy baseball. I love me some baseball, and it's been a few weeks since we talked baseball, so it's good to be back, and it kind of got my juices flowing watching this certain dynasty draft going around there from our goofy friends at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and we'll get all the details in a minute, but let me bring my guest on first. You can find him on Twitter, at RealFakeWalter. He has joined us on the Bench with Bubba podcast before. Walter McMichael, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been cranking them out, because I remember specifically I was episode 68 because I almost made it to 69. But
so close.
You've pumped out, 70 episodes since then? And it's been I guess I came on in February, so it's been 8 months. You've done 70 episodes. That's pretty crazy. That's a lot of content.
First, thank you. Second, my goal is to get 2 out a week. I'm trying to get a football and a baseball, and eventually it'll just be baseball only again once football's done. But you know, with life, things happen, or if it's kind of not as busy, I just kind of say, you know what, I'm going to relax for a week and take a breather. But ideally, I could talk baseball almost any day. So yeah, it's fun.
I don't blame you on taking the breaks. Me and Paul have taken multiple, like, couple month breaks. We recorded this week though, so yes. So it was our first in a couple months. So we're back on there, but yeah, it's impressive. It's not easy to do, to just continuously push out content. So congrats.
Well, thank you. And yeah, go check out their podcast. They've moved over to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Like we said, I've had many of their contributors on. We've had Justin on a bunch of times, and they're all really good guys over there. And Paul and Walter made their bromance come back to life. And it's very, very fun listening to those two, because it's like two brothers that they can bicker at each other for like 30 seconds. And then they can do, you know, they can be friendly and happy. It's a fun dynamic they bring to the table. So go check it out.
Yeah. We try to give out good analysis while also making fun of each other. So
you're very good at that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. We've had Paul on a few times as well. So it's good to have you back. Before we get into the dynasty talk, and it's kind of some of the fun stuff right now. We know we've seen award season. We got hot stove kind of heating up. You got general managers meetings right now. And apparently, as a Baltimore Orioles fan, which we discussed last time you were on, they have some new front office pieces. Why don't you talk about that? Because you were kind of rather excited about it.
Yeah. So they hired Mike Elias, who's the Astros assistant general manager, and he's in charge of player development and their amateur scouting. So, I mean, the big problem with the Orioles ever since I can remember, it's just they've always just had a terrible farm system. I mean, they kind of lucked into getting Manny Machado 1 year at third overall, and, you know, Matt Wieters, who is supposed to be a dude. But, I mean, they've gotten lucky. They've had a lot of top draft picks, so it's like you're just going to have a lot of talent there. But you don't – the really good teams don't win just based on their first-round picks. And, I mean, I think we've all noticed how much talent the Astros just keep pumping out year after year, and their minor leagues is still just stacked full of talent. They've got pitchers coming out of anywhere that they can find. Like, I mean, you got pop-up guys like Josh James and Corbin Martin, and just a ton of prospects. And he's a young guy. He's only 35, so he's made his way through the system. He came over with Lou Now from the Cardinals. So, I mean, I'm pretty excited. This is what the Orioles needed. They needed a young guy that'll come in, change the philosophy, and turn that system over, because it's just been bad for so long.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. I know on my baseball podcast, Around the Bases, Mo and I, we've interviewed some Baltimore writers, and we talked to him a couple times about, you know, what's the philosophy. We know, you know, the leadership's going to be changing over, as you just mentioned, starting to do that. You're going to have a new manager in place. Heck, Brady Anderson might have a very influential role in making decisions as well. And one of the big things we saw towards, you know, the end of the year, early offseason, they started accumulating a lot of international money, because the Orioles never bought into the international pool. It seemed like they were never involved, kind of what you're saying about the minor league system. And they didn't get the piece they wanted, because it makes sense for Cubans to go to Miami. That made the logical sense. But the fact that they have all this money saved up, they can go do something, which they really were never in a position to do before. So the directions are going there. It's going to be, you know, I'll probably have you back on in the preseason to really break down what is going on with the Orioles, because obviously Machado's gone. Adam Jones is going to be gone. You're still stuck with millions of dollars for Chris Davis. You have Dylan Bundy. Can he get back? Who knows? Like, there's a million questions with these guys. But at this point in time, how do you feel about the Orioles, like, now compared to where you were maybe a month ago?
I am definitely feel like they're in a better position. Well, one, because they have a GM in general. Like, they felt like they were just, like, in this phase where you didn't really know what they were going to do. But with this high, I mean, it's just, like, he's, like – it's just like when a team that's been bad for so long, and they hire someone who seems like they're going to be innovative and change the culture, it's just huge for morale. And they're going to have the first overall pick this year. So it's a good time to get a new mind in there, because they're going to have a huge draft class, and they're probably going to have the first overall pick for a couple years. Based on that team, it's just horrible. So, yeah, it's just a good time to get new blood in there.
It'll be fun.
And I like Duquette, and I've always liked David Duquette. But it's just like, it feels like they just didn't.
It was time for a change.
They didn't let him do everything that he wanted, and he did make some pretty good teams out of nothing. I mean, they're overpaying Chris Davis now, but they got him for Koji Uehara, and it's like, if you pull a Chris Davis for Koji Uehara, that's huge. And they got rid of Jake Arrieta, and people hate that. But overall, I think Duquette was a good general manager for the Orioles.
Yeah, it wasn't all his fault, basically, like you're saying. He's not the only reason why things didn't go right there. There was a lot of things in place. And one thing you got to always remember, you got to look with grains of salt on all this. They're always going to have to face the Red Sox. They're always going to have to face the Yankees. And the Rays are usually somewhat competitive. They're not always great. They're somewhat competitive. I loved them coming into the year. I know you guys did as well. The AL East is not going to be a joke ever. Like, it's never going to be the AL Central where you can kind of win 85 games and march to the freaking playoffs. So
yeah, it's tough competing different with the Yankees and Red Sox. It is tough because those teams are always good.
So yeah, maybe one of these years they snag a wild card spot and you can make some magic and you guys can blame Jeffrey Mayer for something again, or I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. But maybe we'll have to make a friendly wager at the beginning of the season after we see the hot stove moves of who gets back to the playoffs first, my lonely Giants or your Orioles. Because I want to say the Giants are in better shape right now, but it's still not pretty by any means.
I think the Orioles are in better shape because they realize that they're bad.
True. That's true. The Giants always hold on to that. Well, if we sign these three veterans that are past their prime, maybe we could put together like 85 wins. Yeah.
No, since we're going to talk about a dynasty league, the Giants are the dynasty team that won a few titles, and they cannot admit that it's time to sell their pieces. They're trying to contend for one more year when they're legitimately like a 10th place team in a dynasty league.
I have a gut feeling, like I said before we recorded, I haven't gone over all the teams, but there's a certain person in your draft that I know pretty well, and I know his philosophies on dynasty leagues, and looking at his first just 10 picks on the main spread right here, I guarantee you Justin Mason will be that team someday. He always goes for the win now philosophy, because I've heard him on many of his shows that he's always like, okay, with dynasties, you never know if they're going to be around for 2 years, 10 years. You don't know, so I go to win now. He always does that. I know he said it on your guys' recent shows that I'm going to just draft these guys so I can trade them. I guarantee you so-and-so, and we'll go into it in a minute, will not be on my team, you know, maybe by the beginning of the season, let alone the middle of the season. So that's what he does.
Yeah, Justin's wrong, but that's fine.
Yeah, it's okay to be wrong. And this is a safe space, Walter, so you can talk crap about Justin Mason as much as you want.
Well, you see, the thing is, I will tell Justin that.
I know.
On the podcast with him. So it's nothing I wouldn't tell him myself. So,
and if you guys want a really fun show, like we've always said when these guys are on, go to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits. During the season, they record every day. Right now, it's a couple times a week. It was, I think, two Mondays or two Tuesdays ago, whatever it was, maybe last Monday or Tuesday. It was Walter, Matt Thompson, I believe it was Justin, and was it Chris?
It was Colin Weatherwax.
Colin Weatherwax, yes. All four of them are on there. And if you want to talk about four guys who know what they're talking about but definitely disagreed on a few things, that was good. Yeah, that was really, really good.
We definitely had our disagreements, that's for sure.
Because you know what I mean? You can listen to some shows and it's like everyone just gets along and agrees. It's like, okay, well, this is kind of boring after a while. No, this was good.
Yeah, if you want disagreement, just ask me to be on a show and I'll give you some disagreement.
I love it. Well, let's get into this. Let's get into this dynasty talk and we'll see where we agree or disagree on things here. I'm usually one of the friendlier ones, but I'm always good for a little debate. First off, 30-team dynasty, 45 rounds, Walter. That is quick math, carry the two. That's over 1,000 picks. I'm not even going to go all the way out if my math's correct. I could be totally wrong. No.
No, you're right.
Yeah, it's over 1,000 picks. Just roughly, what in Sam Hill is your plan here in this draft?
To be honest, it was just like – I – so So just a little background. So 30 teams, you said it's OBP instead of batting average. That's one major difference always. We made it to where it's quality starts plus wins instead of wins or quality starts.
Which one would you have preferred if you only had one?
I think quality. I like wins personally. I like wins and quality starts are both pretty bad stats in general. But now with the way that baseball's going, I mean, you have a ton of openers and it's like you'll have a guy like Ryan Yarbrough who I think finished last year with like 15 wins, but he barely ever started any games, so he's not going to get any quality starts. And it also makes it to where like middle relievers can pick up a few wins, whereas they're pretty much they're zeros in quality starts. So I like wins for the fantasy game in general. I think they're both pretty bad stats, but just putting them together, adding them together, nobody can really argue with you.
So true.
So it's just to make things easier. And then we did saves times two plus holds.
I love that one.
Yeah. So I do like that one in general, but I think it had to be in a league this deep because if not, you'll be stuck where a team has a closer get hurt. And then it's going to cost them their entire farm system just to trade for one of the 30 closers in baseball. So it's kind of like you needed to add a hold aspect into it, even though I think holds is the worst stat in all of baseball. It's just horrendous. Yeah,
because the holds, it's such a loose thing. I can come into the sixth inning and get one out, and that's just bullshit. But
yeah, you can get – I'm pretty sure you can get no outs and get a hold. But
that'd be impressive.
And then you can have like games where it's like each team gets like each team has like two or three holds on each side. It's pretty bad. But you have to add some sort of aspect in there just to level it out because you don't want it to where closers cost so much. And then if it's just saves, you're not going to win your league with no saves. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. So we had to add some sort of holds aspect into it. But yeah, so we did KDS. I don't know if you're familiar with
that. I was going to ask you real quick. Can you explain that? Because I have a rough idea what it is. I have never participated in one, but I guarantee you there's a lot of listeners that have no clue what you're talking about.
So if you played NFBC, it's Kentucky Derby style. Sorry. You pretty much like – So say you have to rank each slot that you want. Like say if it's – well, we did 1 through 30, obviously. But generally it's like 1 through 15. So it's like if the pick you really want is 6, that's your first preference. So if your name gets drawn first, you would get the 6th pick instead of the first. So it's just you rank the picks in order of the preference. I ended up getting super low priority in this. So I ended up with the 21st pick, which isn't too ideal for what I wanted. I wanted the 6th pick because I wanted to be able to get my boy Juan Soto or maybe Vlad Jr.
Yeah, that was definitely not happening at 21.
So, yeah, those were my guys that I wanted. I knew Acuna probably wouldn't fall that far, but I wanted one of those two just because I think those guys in an OBP format are just generational hitters. Like,
well, let's just talk about this real quick because your first handful of picks, I think this will help with the philosophy of maybe what you're going for.
One more thing. It is daily lineup moves,
which is interesting
instead of weekly, but it's weekly fab. So you can only just set your lineup daily. And you make free agent ads weekly. So that's why my second round pick is who it was. And
yes,
I'm sure that interests you.
Yes, that's where we're going with this. Is you have, let's just start with your top 10 here. You have roughly given one guy played in the pros last year for a little bit with the Rockies. No, I'm not talking about Shohei. You have 7 of the 10 guys are still prospects. And then you have Shohei Ohtani, He took number 2 overall, which would be pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about pick 30, 41 overall. Yeah. So, you guys are going to forgive me on this one. There's so many freaking picks. It's insane. But, what was that?
Oh, I was going to say, I have the pick numbers if you want them. So, I can tell you
what's convenient. You know what's convenient? I just went to your team page and they're right there.
Yep,
what a convenience. I'm an idiot. But you went Eloy and then Shohei number 2. You know, for not getting, you wanted Ronald or Soto or Vlad at 6, getting Eloy at 21, I think, is outstanding.
Yeah, I love Eloy Jimenez. I think I'm going to be targeting him a lot in redraft leagues this year. He's getting overshadowed by Vlad and Acuna and Soto. And it's like in a lot of years, he would be a number 1 overall prospect. And we would be so excited about Eloy because he just completely annihilated AA and AAA last year. And I mean, Steamer loves him. They project him to hit 342 OBP and we're in about like 28 home runs on the year. And that's as he'll be 22 during the season. And I think they're a little light on his power, honestly. This is a guy who has like 80 raw power. He's just going to crush, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is a massively huge pick there at pick 21. The power is legit. This guy is going to be really, really good in that ballpark. I like that a ton. And then you came up with number 2. And yes, he's not going to pitch at all next year. But first off, is he going to be pitcher and hitter eligible in this league at the same time?
Yes, he will be pitcher and hitter eligible.
So he will pick 40 overall. That is outstanding to get Mr. Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I debated taking him in the first, but I kind of felt that he would make it back to me in the second, and I didn't think Eloy would. So, yeah, Ohtani in this format, if we do this draft again in a year, he's going to be a top 10 pick. Because even if I'm only able to get 100 to 120 innings out of him, plus having him hit, like, he just – like, I was so surprised how good of a hitter he was last year. Mm-hmm. He was amazing. And then he was a great pitcher as well. And in a 30-team league, being able to have one spot that is a pitcher and a hitter is just huge.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impressive for a guy that battled all those injuries. He still came out with 22 homers, 10 stolen bases, in what some would say limited role. I think it's pretty darn good. You know, I was talking with Fantasy Front Office Phil a couple hours before we recorded, and I was just looking at his stats, looking at the Steamer projections for him to hit next year, and the Steamer projections are just outstanding. He's like a 275.
I think it's 31 home runs and 600 plate appearances. By WRC plus, I had already checked all of these before I did the pick. By WRC plus, he's projected as the 12th best hitter. Exactly. In baseball.
Was it like 143 or something like that?
I don't remember. 40 something.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
He's going to be a beast.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I like that a lot. I think it's good because I was talking with Phil and he was talking about where would you take him in a dynasty, and I already knew where you took him. But I said, you know, in all reality, if this is one where you can keep him forever and you could do this, that, or the other, I wouldn't judge you if you took him in the second round. That's kind of what you would have done if you took him in your first pick, because it's a second round pick in most drafts. The fact you got him essentially at like a third to fourth round pick, depending on your league size, is just bananas to me. So I think that's a great move. Even if he doesn't bounce back to the pitcher he was supposed to be, just that bat alone. He's so young. People forget that with him. I think that's a great pick. Now, what you continue to do now with your next two picks is take more prospects. One we might see this year. One we definitely won't, but he's an absolute beast. Top pick in the draft, Royce Lewis. And you have Bo Bichette. So based on this start, are you trying to win now or are you trying to win in a couple of years?
No, I am a accumulator of assets kind of person. It doesn't have to be that I win this year. It doesn't have to. I would prefer to win year 2, but if it takes until year 3, that's fine. But I want as many assets as I can possibly have accumulated onto one roster. And so I just take who I think has the most trade value at each pick.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. Royce Lewis is going to be absolutely outstanding. You took Bichette, like I said, and now we have to talk. We really have to talk about this one. Your fifth pick, he was pick 141 in a dynasty league. And okay, and I know he's young. He's a former number one pick. What are you seeing in Byron Buxton that you couldn't have waited another 100 picks for?
Well, he wasn't going to last another 100 picks. But, look, I'm not going to lie. Byron Buxton is pretty terrible. And the way I look at it is, if he comes out hot the first month, I'm going to be able to flip him for way more than this pick. Obviously, there's the risk that he just completely tanks in. I just whiff on this pick. But it at this point in the draft, I'm 100 – we're, what, you said 140 picks into the draft?
At that point,
yeah. Around there? Yeah. Yes. So at that point, I know it's my fifth pick, but at that point it's like the risk is – like the cost of it, it's like the reward outweighs the risk at that point. He would have went in the first round of this draft last year.
100%. Possibly, yeah. I could see how you could say that, because people were taking it around 140 in a redraft league last year. So
last year that. He was going like 50 overall in redraft.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah,
I must have just canceled him from my memory last year.
Yeah, people loved him last year, and I don't know. I think he still is a former number one overall prospect. I mean, I just think there's still a lot of talent there, and I'm just trying to accumulate high upside assets at this point.
Okay, well, let's talk about this thing, because we know he spent 35 games at AAA, 28 in the bigs last year. He had injuries. He had, it seemed like, the DGAF mode. It was just a combination of, I think he started to realize that his name and draft pick alone won't matter anymore. So you look at the Steamer projections, and Steamer's got him for 49 games. He's got 6 homers, 21 runs, 22 RBIs, and 7 stolen bases. 49 games, over under.
Oh, he's going to play more than 49 games. That's a brutal projection. I don't know why they have it so low. I mean, if he's healthy, his defense alone will keep him in the majors. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what he's going to be this year, but there are skills there. In 2017, he hit 16 home runs and stole 29 bases. If he does that, I got a good pick at 140 overall.
If he does that, that's outstanding. I completely agree with you there. I don't know. He's probably going to do it eventually because the talent is there. I think he needs to figure out what his game is. I think that'll help him a ton. But I guess he's got a little bit. I guess he's got time. You just can't let the likes of Kepler, Rosario, and then Kirilloff come pass you by.
Yeah, I mean Kirilloff is a ways away. So, but yeah, Kepler. I mean, those guys aren't going to keep Buxton away from the field. Like Jake Cave. These guys aren't going to. I don't see him as a threat personally.
Okay, then let's move on. You got Garrett Hampson, who I absolutely love. I talked about him last year. I said, DJ LeMahieu's leaving town. This kid, he can hit. He's another LeMahieu, basically, to me. He can hit. He's not a huge power guy, but he gets on. I like him a lot, so I think that's a very stable piece there. But after that, at pick 201, you went with the guy that's getting in traffic accidents in his foreign land. He is not very talented at the moment, but he can hit balls a mile. You got Miguel Sano. So what's your mindset on this one?
This is pretty much the same pick as Buxton, but with an all-power guy. A former top prospect that nobody likes anymore. Steamer projects him to hit 30 home runs with a 326 OBP. So, I mean, he's shown 10% walk rates every year in his career. So I just think this is a good point to buy Sano. Average leagues – I'm a little worried because he could easily hit 220, 230, but in OBP leagues, it incorporates his second best skill, which is taking a walk.
No, and I like that. OBP, you're 100% correct there. If you're looking average, you're in trouble. OBP, you know, and Steamer, people need to realize I love using them as projections. I talk about them all the time. A, because it's like the only thing we got right now. And B, I like the fact that they're more conservative. So it's more like a floor with some upside instead of some projections might, you know, kind of over project, if that makes sense. I like using the Steamer. So in reality, you know, they're saying 29, 30 home runs. Heck, we know Miguel Sano, and that's still in 140 games. If he plays 140 games and he's got that pop back, he's hitting you 40 home runs, and he's got still at a 330 or 340 OBP.
Again, in 2017, Miguel Sano, in 114 games, had a 352 OBP with 28 home runs. Yep. Like, I can just get that, he's a steal here. So
at that point, definitely.
Yeah, so it's just trying to put together guys that I think are values at the pick that they're going.
So three of the top seven picks are Minnesota Twins. Did Nate Dawkin talk to you before this or something?
I know. I even messaged in our little group chat. I was like, "Yep, I'm officially a Twins fan now. Sorry, guys. That's I mean, I might as well root for the Twins. The
Orioles got a better chance than the Orioles." Your next three picks, more prospects, George Valera from Cleveland, UC Kikuchi, Esteban Florial. Talk to me about this Kikuchi because I honestly have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not that much out there right now, but he's going to be he's one of the best starting pitchers on the market. He's a 27-year-old Japanese lefty, so he's going to be in the majors this year. And I know – I don't know if you know Tim McLeod.
Yes.
And he loves UC Kikuchi, so I'm going to take his word for this one. And it was
did you call him Juicy or UC?
UC.
Oh, because I like the idea of calling him Juicy Kikuchi. This could be fun.
Juicy UC? Yeah, that could work.
This could be fun.
But, yeah, I did, at this point, it was like if you look at the starters going around him, it's like Jake Arrieta, Ryan Yarbrough, Julio Teheran were the starters that went after him. So it's kind of like – I mean, those guys are so underwhelming. I'll take a guy and just hope that he gets a little bit of hype or pitches well. And I mean, so many, like at this point, we're already real deep and we're only 10 or 9 rounds in. So,
yeah. So after Florial, your 10th pick, it's 280 picks in. We won't go pick by pick. I'll just name them off real quick and we'll just kind of broadly talk about it. We got Jeff McNeil, who was, you know, a top three or four in the rookie of the year balloting for the Mets. You have Brandon Lowe, a stud bat for the Tampa Bay Rays. You got Xavier Edwards, Nolan Jones. You got Nate Pearson, who just blew up in the Arizona Fall League. Marco Luciano, Giants. Dalton Varsho. You got Michael Chavis. If he's off the steroids, we'll see how that goes. O'Neill Cruz. Mark Vientos, D.L. Hall, got your Oriole action there in round 21. And then with your 640th pick, 22nd round, Dennis Santana from the Dodgers, good young arm. We saw you had surgery, but good young arm. Moral of the story, though, you have maybe three starters, four starters, the rest are your minor leaguers. Where are you going from here?
I mean, I don't plan on contending this year, obviously. And – it's like, how frequently do we talk about, oh my gosh, I hate it that this young starting pitcher is hurt. Oh man, this young starting pitcher had so much talent, but he just blew out his elbow. Oh man, this starting pitcher is really struggling in the majors.
Yep.
Just don't buy young starting pitchers. Buy the ones that are showing that ace potential. Like a lot of these guys, like they went really high. Like let me just look at the draft. Like Sean Newcomb went in the third round. The starting pitchers are just so – it's so hard. Like, okay, so Jesus Luzardo went in the fifth round. I love Jesus Luzardo.
Yep.
I think he's going to be great. He already has Tommy John on his resume.
Yep.
Alex Reyes was the next pitcher. How many years have we been waiting for Alex Reyes to be healthy?
Quite a while.
Yeah. Then we have Brent Honeywell, who also went. And it's like, I own Brent Honeywell in two dynasty leagues. And I was hoping, and I was thinking he was going to contribute for me last year. And he blew out his elbow. Denelson Lamet was the next starting pitcher off the board. Blew out his elbow last year. Michael Kopech is the next starting pitcher. Blew out his elbow last year. It just – the list goes on and on and on and on and on. You just, once your bats are ready to compete, buy starting pitcher.
No, I agree with you there. I think that's definitely a good option there. Let's talk about a couple just kind of players, and we'll go through some teams here. First off, for many that haven't listened to the podcast with these guys yet, can you explain to me Matt Thompson taking Ronald Acuña number one over Mike Trout?
You'll have to talk to Matt about that. I can't give any good reasoning. I know he said that he wanted to own Ronald Acuña and all this stuff, and he owns Mike Trout. You should. The only spot that can't be argued, in my opinion, is Mike Trout at one.
Yep. Yeah, because in dynasties, there's a million different ways you can go with it. There's different strategies, especially with OBP compared to average, the different formats. There's a ton of ways to go. But I tweeted out earlier when Mike Trout finished second to Mookie Betts tonight. In Mike Trout's seven full seasons, he's finished fourth once, he's won two MVPs, and he's been runner-up four times. So he's finished top two in the MVP voting six straight seasons. Like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, and honestly, I think the last 2 years were the only years he really shouldn't have won. Like, I can easily see a case for Mookie this year. I thought Judge should have won last year, not Altuve. But every other year, Trout was the best player in baseball.
Yes, by far.
Like, even the year Miguel Cabrera won Triple Crown, Mike Trout should have won MVP that year. He was the best player in baseball.
Definitely. So you got Trout 2. Mookie Betts went 3. I don't hate it. Obviously, just won the MVP award on Wednesday night. But you got Vladito going 3rd ahead of Lindor and Juan Soto 5th or 6th, I guess. Vlad going 4th overall. What's your thoughts on that? Would you have gone sooner, or is that about right?
Honestly, I think Acuña, Betts, Vlad, Lindor, Soto, and Jose Ramirez, for me, are all just like one tier. You can pick which one you like the most. I can tell you I like a different one more, and we're both right.
Yeah. Now, it is kind of personal preference-y. I just think it's crazy when you look at Steamer projections like we've been talking about. They have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. projected to lead Major League Baseball with a .306 batting average. He's going to hit 22 homers. And like, because they're already factoring in, he's not going to be up until, you know, like the third week in April or second week in April, whatever it is. It's insane how good this guy's going to be. And for years to come, he's only what, 19, something like that.
Yeah, he'll be 20 crazy. Next year, but he's just going to destroy baseballs. That's what Vlad does. Yeah. Just destroys baseballs.
And it gets interesting again. No pitchers taken for a while, all the way until Chris Sale. Well, let's just talk about that. Chris Sale goes, you know, pick – I'm trying to do it without loading up the full page.
19.
Yeah, 19. That's where you are. 19 overall. First pitcher off the board, Chris Sale at 19. A, do you think that's too early for a pitcher? And B, would you have taken Chris Sale over other options there?
I wouldn't have taken Chris Sale just because, obviously, I've told you my strategy. Yeah. And but I he would be my number one starter in Dynasty. He's just – he's so elite. Like, and he's 30, so he's got, what, 4 years on Scherzer?
Yep.
And honestly, he's so much better than Nola, Snell, Walker Buehler, all these guys on a per-inning basis. He's so much better than them.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. It's just interesting with at Brew Crew Pep, Dave P. I'm not sure I know exactly who he is yet, but I'm going to have to follow him after this. So he takes Chris Sale there with the 19th pick. He comes back with Victor Robles, which I absolutely love. I was talking about him earlier today, that he's kind of the forgotten man, I feel, with Juan Soto coming up. If it wasn't for Juan Soto, Victor Robles goes – he's up there instead, if Victor doesn't get hurt, I mean. And you go with Mr. Reliable, sure. Justin Upton. But then his next pitcher is in the fourth round, and he goes Forrest Whitley, which is interesting. But overall, his pitching, you know, Whitley, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Wade Davis, Julius Chacin – quite an interesting repertoire he's got there, but I guess he backed it up okay. What do you think about his team so far, the way he started after taking Chris Sale with his first pick?
I like it. I really like Victor Robles. Like, if Ohtani hadn't fallen to me, I probably would have taken him in the second round. I think he's going to be – he's pretty much going to be Starling Marte, but with a little bit better OBP. Justin Upton – I'm not really a Justin Upton guy. I think I probably would have preferred Tommy Pham to him, but I think that's fine. And Whitley is a starter. I do want to invest in Whitley, but obviously my tendency is to kind of fade the young starters. But he looks like a beast. But obviously, like last year, we thought he probably would be able to make the rotation, but he got hurt.
Yep. it's interesting because we talked to Chris Sale, and then it goes towards the end. You got Nolas, Blake Snell, Walker Buehler, DeGrom wrap out towards the end of the first round. And then the second round, you got Cole, Scherzer, Yugo Ohtani, Bauer, Severino, Carrasco, Syndergaard, Kluber, Corbin, and then Berrios, Verlander. Now it's almost half of the draft to the first two rounds as pitchers all of a sudden. Do you feel, and obviously it's hard to tell with 30 guys, was this kind of an, oh, crap, I better make sure I have an ace, or is this kind of a, it made sense?
I think it was a lot of teams, if you look at the draft, you can tell they wanted to contend this year. So if you're going to want to contend this year, you need an ace.
Yeah.
Especially considering all these other teams are going to have aces. Like you said, it went on a run, and once the person in front of you takes one and the ace well is kind of drying up and you know they're not going to make it back to you, they kind of had to take one. And it's crazy. There's no way I could take Nola, Snell, Walker Buehler in the first round. Those guys, like, I like them, but I don't know. There's just so many good bats you could have taken. Like, it's hard for me. It's hard for me.
With a dynasty draft, like in season-long drafts, sometimes runs happen and you got to play them even if you don't want to type thing. In a dynasty draft, it's obviously kind of how your philosophy goes. How do you treat things when you see runs start to happen in a draft?
Just in general, or
like, you know, like in redrafts, all of a sudden a closer run happens or a catcher run happens, and some guys all flock to it, obviously creating the run. Now, you already mentioned, you know, it's dynasty, you didn't need pitching, it's all these different philosophies, but you see them happen. If you just look at this grid, runs happened. How do you approach those when they're going on?
I usually just do something else, because when a run is happening, that means that resource is kind of drying up, or you're kind of forcing a pick. So I mean, some of these, like the guy, like the pick of Patrick Corbin, that one seemed kind of forced. I don't know. I'm not going to get too much into that one, but but
is that Andrew Dyer's team?
Yeah,
I think so.
It wasn't his team, but it is now. He did not make the first three picks, but yeah, that one seemed kind of forced. But it's kind of like part of the reason I wouldn't take some of these pitches is because if you look at it's Ben and Goldie, which is Colin Weatherwax. He didn't take a pitcher in the first two rounds, but he still ended up with James Paxton and Madison Bumgarner as his first two starters. I mean, that's in a 30-team league, that's amazing to me. I could see James Paxton outperforming pretty much any of these starters.
Definitely.
And he got him in the third round. So I just think kind of what he did, where he just kind of skipped over the pitchers and took – what he thought was the best bat is the best option at the point. You forget the runs and you just take who you think is the best player that fits your team the best.
Yeah. When I do my dynasty drafting, I kind of start out with, I try to get guys that are like 25 to 28 or 29 that still have a handful of years left, so I can contend now, but I can contend for a while, throw in some prospects that will kind of come up and replace. That's my goal going into a draft. Obviously, does it happen all the time? No. But that's kind of where I look at things when I'm drafting.
Yeah. Yeah, hard thing is everybody wants the 25 to 28-year-old.
Yes, that's where it gets very difficult.
That's very the difficult. Hard part.
So at this point, before we go look at other teams, how are you feeling about things right now? Do you feel like you need to address anything more than others?
Oh, I love my team so far. I think I'm just going to continue just take who I think is the best player on the board. If it does end up being, I mean, I probably won't own many relief pitchers, but I think you can just find those during the season, even in a league this deep. Relievers just pop up out of nowhere. So,
yeah, especially when you got saves and holds.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I'm just going to continue hammering home the young bats. Very young bats.
Let's pick on some teams here. Let's have some fun with this. I'll try to keep it to guys I know more so than others to try to be nice to the situation. But if you have any you want to go with, let's do it. Let's start with good old Mike Alexander, our buddy over there, Roto Juan. I'm pretty sure that's his getting gritty with it team.
Yep, that was him.
J.D. Martinez, Miguel Andujar, Jesus Aguilar, Marcelo Ozuna, Chris Archer, Didi, DeJong, Vertigo, Sixto Sanchez, Morton, Jaimel Jones, who I love a lot as a prospect, Healy, Andrew Miller, Caleb Smith, Ty Buffery, so on and so forth. All in all, I think this is sneaky good, and he's starting to pick up, you know, guys like Shed Long and others towards the end so far. Again, only halfway through the draft. If you had to pick on anything with this team, what would you pick on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's gonna be contending. So, yep. But he has absolutely no speed. I mean, he took Jankowski, but he has no speed. J.D. Martinez, Andujar, Aguilar, Ozuna, Didi, DeJong, they're all pretty much zeros in stolen bases. So, I think he needed to balance out his categories a little bit better. But I think he's gonna be a contender, and I think you can pick up speed during the season, so he can go hit up Smata for terrible Billy Hamilton.
Yeah, we'll get to that pick in a minute, though, because I think it's that's a sneaky nice pick. But let's talk about Mr. Mason. This is always a fun one because this team is going to get you going. He's on the Trey Turner bandwagon, like so many are for some reason. You got Luis Severino, Joey Votto, great OBP player, as we all know. You got Zach Greinke, of course, who might get traded. Who knows where that's going to go? But Mason will tell you all the good stuff about him if you ask him. And then he's got Justin Turner, Felipe Vasquez, Ross Stripling. He did get Victor. That's the one of the guys he claimed will not be on his team by the start of the year. He got Louis Robert. Then he goes and gets freaking Miguel Cabrera. That one I did not understand. He got his boy Kyle Gibson. He's got a lot of guys for the now, but then he started getting like Helio Ramos, Roman Quinn, Tapia, Bubba Thompson, Jalen Beeks, Luis Patino. He got decent prospects towards the end, but he's definitely going for the now mode. What do you think about Mason's strategy?
I mean, yeah, he drafted all the dinosaurs, the general Justin Mason strategy. He did get kind of lucky that Trey Turner fell to him and Severino.
That surprised me.
So he got some young studs to start his team, but he got Joey Votto, Greinke. But I do love Justin Turner. I think he has a skill set that will age well. Felipe Vasquez is a young closer. Victor and Robert were definitely picks that he took just to flip eventually. I like Miguel Cabrera there. He's still Miguel Cabrera. He can still hit. It's just if he stays healthy and you're at pick like 280 or something at that point. So I don't know. I like Miguel Cabrera there. He's going after guys like Luke Voit and Yuli Gurriel and Tyler White and Carlos Santana. I don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
I think that's actually a good pick there.
Do you believe Miguel Cabrera? Like, we know he saw his workout videos right now. He's lifting weights in his native land. But are we buying a Miguel Cabrera resurgence? I know he was banged up a lot last year, but are we actually buying into this?
Well, if you look at it, last year he hit .299 with a .395 OBP. He could still hit when he played. I don't know how much power is left, but yeah, I think if he's on, that's just Miguel Cabrera. So I'll buy that price.
Are we believing Steam are projecting him for 25 home runs?
that's gonna be tough. I'm not sure if it's 25, maybe it's like 20, but I mean if he has a 370 OBP, that's great at that point.
Now looking at the, you know, we said he just went God, this page keeps reloading on me. He got him in round 10 of this draft. So like you said a second ago, that is pick 286, which is pretty freaking good. Looking at the two early mocks ADPs, he was going about 177. Say you're redrafting in the Great Fantasy Invitational. Would you take Miguel Cabrera between 170 and 180 overall?
It really depends on what my team needs, but if he fit, like if I needed a batting average boost, yeah, for sure, I'd take Miguel Cabrera there. You're gonna drop so many players that you pick at that area. It's and how many of them truly have Miguel Cabrera's hitting upside?
Okay. That is very, very true. Let's talk about let's go to Matt Thompson's team. It's always fun. We already mentioned you got Ronald Acuna. I like the coming back with Verlander and Jack Flaherty. Don't hate that at all. Got Scooter, Gene Segura, and then he goes back to his prospect roots. For those that know Matt, he's been on the show. He's a big prospect guy for fantasy, Friends with Benefits, and now he's got Prospect Live with all the boys, Ralph Lifshitz and company. But he got all his prospects, and Jake Lamb, of course, he had to get Nolan Gorman, otherwise he'd kill someone. Hunter Renfro, who I really like that pick at pick 300, I think. Renfro's in for a huge year. Bradley, Matthew Libidor, Steven Souza, so on and so forth. It's an interesting team. He got his prospects early, and he's filled it in with some pretty okay guys after that. What are you thinking with Matt Thompson's team, given withholding not taking Mike Trout number one?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done a good job. You know, he's picked up a few Cardinals players along the way, of course. Like he just had a Cardinals turn of Malcolm Nunez and I think it's John Torres, but yeah, I think he's got a solid team. It's kind of weird what he did because the first five picks were a lot of win now, and then he went Christian Robinson and Andrés Giménez at the next turn, which is kind of counter to what he did early on. But I have a feeling he's gonna be on the trade market trying to get some win now pieces with that. And that's the thing with 30 teams, there's gonna be teams selling, and you will definitely want to have. The best currency to have when there's bad teams is to have the young bats, and so I'll be there when they're ready to sell.
There you go, already planning their demise. A team that I really like the direction it's going, it should be no surprise. He's very quiet but very, very powerful with his tweets and his data work and everything else he does. But Smata, outside of being a computer genius, has put together a very, very solid-looking start, at least in my opinion here. You can disagree if you so choose. But when you have the likes of, first, you know, called Smata Industries is pretty freaking good. But Bryce Harper, Joey Gallo in an OBP league is outstanding. Fernando Tatis Jr., Joe Adell, Jesse Winker, Danny Jansen, Ketel Marte, Juy Lucchesi, Nate Lowe, Billy Hamilton at pick 293, I do not hate at all. I think it is a great way to get steals late or trade, like you said. Skaggs, Isaac Paredes, Ken Giles, so on and so forth. I think this has been a sneaky good draft. Luis Basabe at pick 593, I think can be sneaky nice. You know, you got Mitchie Twobags at pitch 668. I'd rather have Mitchie Twobags than Miguel Cabrera. I'll put that out there right now.
Ooh, that's – I'm not sure about that one. But because Mitch Moreland, I mean, yeah, Mitch Moreland's going to be solid. He will be solid, but he just has no upside at all.
I guess he had some upside this year. He almost made the All Star team for goodness' sake. But what do you think about Smata here so far? I think he's got a really good balance of prospects, young guys that can play now. The whole cha cha. I think he's doing pretty darn good there.
No, Smata's team is horrible. I can't stand that guy. No, I'm just kidding. But no, Smata's awesome. His team is interesting. His picks always annoyed me throughout the draft. You know, I was hoping Tatis would make it to me in the third round. Didn't happen. Then I was hoping Wander Franco would make it to me and didn't happen. But I'm happy with Royce Lewis there. Yeah, smartest team. I really like it. Joe Adell, I think, is going to be a beast. I was between him and Bo Bichette for my fourth pick. Jesse Winker in an OBP league is awesome. Danny Jansen as well. Yep. I'm not sure about Keto Marte as much. Joey Lucchesi is his number one starter, so you can tell he faded the starting pitchers like I did. And obviously,
I like where the rest of his starters turned out. I like where the rest of his starters turned out, though. I think it's pretty sneaky nice.
Yeah, they're
for fading that long.
yeah, they're okay, guys. He's going to need to do a lot of work on his rotation, just like I'm going to have to. But yeah, I really like his team. He's going to have a consistent contender is what I'm expecting. I feel like I'm going to have to contend with him in the next few years when my team is finally put together.
All right. Without going over every person's team, because there's a lot of different ways to break all of them down. We have 30 teams here. were there any other ones that really stood out to you? Like, this is really good or this is really crappy. This is a judgment and free zone. You can judge all you want. No one can ridicule you for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Darius Austin, he has a partner. I can't think of his partner's name right now. They had the second pick in the draft, and I'm pretty sure they're going to win this year. If you just look at their team, their first three picks are Mike Trout, Charlie Blackmon, and Clayton Kershaw.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have Travis Shaw, Kenley Jansen, Tim Anderson. Yeah. Their team all put together is going to be really, really good this year. And I think pretty tough to beat.
Marwin Gonzalez, Rick Porcello, Posey in round 10. Yeah. They're not messing around.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they didn't take a prospect until like round 20.
Yep. Yeah. They went. it's smart though. When you have Mike Trout, you have to win now.
Heck, you got Kyle Lewis in round 21. That's outstanding. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry to keep interrupting you. I'm impressed by that squad. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Their team's going to be really strong this year. I'm not sure how good it's going to be in a year, but it looks really good this year. And like they did a good job of putting a nice solid rotation together without having to spend highly on it. I mean, Kershaw in the third round, but I mean, damn, Kershaw in the third round is insane to see.
Compared to like where Chris Sale and those guys went? Like,
yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's – so their team is going to be really, really strong this year, in my opinion. Let me see what other – obviously, I told you about Colin's team. I really liked his start that he got those two starters.
What's his team name? Oh, yeah, he got the – yeah.
Ben and Goldie. Yeah, I like that he got those two starters a lot without having to use one of his first two picks. So he got Benintendi and Goldie, which was a nice start. The guy who's really been killing me with a lot of picks just throughout the draft, just some prospects and stuff, was Steve Ross. Like he took he took a couple guys like Drew Waters and Brian Rocchio in the last couple rounds that I really wanted, and he kind of took them from me. So that's always that's always rough when they do that to you. But yeah. It's hard to keep up with who everyone has throughout the draft because it's like, yeah, there's 30 teams. So it's just so hard to wrap your head around it, even when you're in the draft. And we've been going so fast. Like we started this last Monday and we're through. Yeah. We're in the 23rd round. So we've made over 600 picks in 10 days.
You guys will be done around Thanksgiving.
Possibly if the pace keeps up, but yeah, I wasn't expecting to go this fast. I've been in 15 team redraft leagues that are 30 rounds that take longer than this. People are taking the full 8 hours, but we're honestly all hounding people. You know, people take 20 minutes and we're yelling at them. Justin's telling him they're fired if they take 30 minutes. So,
fucking Justin. that's good stuff. And now that he's, on paternity leave for 2 months, he's got more time to to bug people. You don't have to if you don't want to. I guarantee you, or I want to say, they're not going to listen to this. What are some of the prospects like you're hoping or like that you're waiting on and hoping they're there? You don't have to if you don't want to.
Just looking through my queue right now. So one guy, oh, here you go, a Giants prospect.
Okay, Joey Bart?
No, Bart is way gone.
He should have been gone. Yeah, I was about to say, how the heck could he still be around?
Yeah, Alexander Canario.
Okay.
He's a low-level outfielder, or rookie ball outfielder. So, but he's shown a strong walk rate, and he has power and speed. So he's a guy that's interesting. He's only 18. I think my next pick, I'm kind of undecided on my next pick, to be completely honest. I have a ton of players in my queue right now that I haven't really sorted out. But I'm really big on taking the international players.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, if you look at the top of these drafts.
Actually, you're on the clock. You're on the clock. If you want to make a pick on the air.
Oh, I'm on the clock right now?
I'm pretty sure. Alex Fado just got taken.
I've been on the clock for 20 minutes now. They're probably screaming at me.
You could send them my way. We can talk to them.
I'm
kind of. Let's talk through this.
Yeah, I have a couple guys. I think. I think here I'm going to take Antonio Caballo. I think that's how you say his name. I'm very big on taking the young international signings who have shown something. Like he really crushed in rookie ball last year for the Yankees. So I'm thinking him, or I could take Orelvis Martinez, who was the highest signed. He got the largest bonus this year, other than Victor.
I might go that direction, but that's just me.
So I'll take Orelvis Martinez. He's a Blue Jays prospect. Jason Waddell really likes him.
Oh, there you go.
And that's always good enough for me. If Jason Waddell likes him, yep. I'm probably going to pick him up or draft him in my dynasty drafts.
Well, there you have it, folks. Live on the air, pick, around 24 or something crazy, like bananas. Pick 600, like 80 in the draft, just made by Walter McMichael. Beautiful times.
Because if you look at this, like, I know that Ben Badler loves Marco Luciano, another Giants prospect.
Yep. The Giants are slowly building things up.
Yeah, they're good at. They sign the international players. They are players in that market. So, Ben Badler said he has like he would be the potential guy to do like the Wander Franco type jump. Not necessarily that he is Wander Franco, but
huge.
Just that he could get that kind of hype. And if you look, Wander Franco won the third round of this draft.
That's tremendous then, get stuff like that. You talked about on your podcast last night, you drafted a dynasty team with your buddy Paul Martin there. Now, right now you're doing it by yourself, so obviously you can kind of go with what you want to go with. What's it like having to draft with a partner? Like, I hate doing it, but how do you guys do it and make it work so well?
Well, that one was actually an auction draft. So
I remember you talked about that last year.
It was a slow auction, and it was a headache sometimes. But a lot of times,
who, Paul or the auction?
Both. And me. I'm sure I was a headache too. But last year, I remember we were doing it. We saved up a ton of money to get Vlad, and we didn't because we still got outbid. A guy bid like $40 on him out of the standard 260, and we had to use it to buy like 40 players. And this was I know you've had Bidon and Donkey Teeth from the Ditka Sausage Pot. So it's their dynasty league that they run. We partnered up and have a team. So what we ended up doing is we shifted all of our money and just bought a ton of prospects. We kind of smoothed it out, and we ended up, like, one of the guys I was like, you know, we're going to get him. And we took Juan Soto, was one of them. We spent up a little bit for him. A guy Paul really wanted that I didn't want was Miguel Andujar. So that ended up paying out. So it's kind of like, sometimes you just got to let one person take this, the other person take that. And we ended up, we did not plan on contending. We did the whole, we're not contending this year, we'll contend next year. And we finished third the first year doing that.
Not
because
bad.
we had, obviously we had random guys that came up and did way better than we expected. And our main spend was Jose Ramirez last year. So we had him, Soto, and Matt Chapman, and guys like that. And then we ended up buying Kershaw in the middle of the year because we needed an ace. So
okay,
it ended up working really well. And I think our team is definitely one of the favorites to win. If not, we're either going to win or come in second is what I'm going to project.
I like it. Calling your shot early, really early, November early. I like that. When you're looking at dynasty drafts, and you know, I saw, you know, Lance McCullers went in the 11th round, and that seems pretty fair. But in a 30 team league, that's well over 300 picks. How do you approach guys where you know the pedigree is good, injuries happen, you probably aren't going to have them for the year? How do you approach a guy like that? Do you just never want to touch him? Does he have to drop an extra couple rounds? How do you look at that? Because I know, like, Brent Honeywell goes, but he'll be back later this year. Kind of, I know it's pick your poison type stuff.
Yeah, I think that in the actual draft, unless they go for like a big discount, I think McCullers went in a good spot. So I was definitely thinking about getting him. But I think the main thing to do, especially if you're rebuilding in dynasty leagues, is to go out and buy the hurt players, because you're going to get them at a discount. And if your team is bad, you don't really care that you're waiting that year for them to get healthy. Like, I don't expect my team to contend this year. So Shohei Ohtani, doesn't really matter how much he's going to hit this year or if he's going to have to take time off to go rehab his arm. And it doesn't really matter to me. But if I was looking to contend this year, Ohtani would probably be someone I would try and sell and get major value for. But yeah, like the guys like Michael Kopech, he went at a good time, but he he's going to miss all of this year. I he didn't really go as much of a discount, so I wasn't really thinking about Kopech.
Colin's team,
Colin took him a little too high for my liking, just because there can be plenty of complications with it. But I think it's a good strategy to get guys like Garrett Richards went. Justin Mason actually took him, and I was thinking about taking him the round that he took him in round 20. Like, that's
it's not bad, round 20.
If Garrett Richards comes back,
yep, that's tremendous.
And is Garrett Richards, you got a major, major steal. So I think it's a very, very good strategy.
But we won't tell him that, so it's okay.
Yeah. Edit that part out.
Or you can tell him it's okay. He's got Jeff Samardzija, Kyle Gibson, and Ross Stripling to go with it, so it's okay.
Yeah, they'll all be heard this year too. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, they'll all be sharing time on the DL. But well, with that being said, Walter, any final thoughts on this draft? You're still going strong, long ways to go. Like I said, we could pick apart all kinds of things here, but any final thoughts on this?
No. I think the main thing with drafts like this is just, especially in a league this big, get the guy that you want at that pick. Like, just take him there. Don't worry about if he's going to come back to you, because he's probably not. Like, you're going to be like, oh, man, this guy, I really wanted him. Well, you should have just taken him.
It's so true, because, like, when you're coming back, you have to wait almost over 40 picks till you go again. It gets ridiculous.
Yeah, I got to wait 40 picks. And I'm like, well, I need to take the guy I want right now, because he's not coming back at all. So,
like, to make that easier for you non-math majors out there, for most people that play in 12 teams leagues, that's like 3.5 rounds before you get to pick again.
It's brutal. It really rough. Is, and it's hard because it's like you have to think through every decision more, because the shortest wait I have is 20 picks.
The shortest wait.
Yeah, it's 20 picks.
Oh man,
that's the shortest wait I have.
It's one of those that makes you wonder, would it have been better to be like around pick 15 and just have that even both directions, or would you rather be on the end and just do like the bang bang and then wait forever?
No, I don't want the end. I don't want the end here, because that's where you get really screwed, because you have to.
You got to really reach.
You really have to reach for the guys you want then. So, yeah, I did not want the end. So
it almost makes you think you almost want to be in the middle in a draft of this size.
Yeah, I wanted like six, mainly because I wanted to get one of those guys. But I think where I ended up became a good spot for me, because it's like I didn't have to wait. I mean, yeah, 40 picks is a lot, but it's like you said, some of them are waiting 60 to get back to them. So,
and in reality, I think Eloy Jimenez at pick 21 in a dynasty draft is amazing. What you guys maybe haven't discussed this yet, Justin may know because he's the ringleader for all things Friends with Fantasy Benefits. But what's going to happen? Because the hardest part about dynasty leagues is keeping the owners. What's your guys' fallback plans? I know. You guys, a majority of you, I'd say at least 90% of you want this to work for a long time. I know Justin would. It would create great content. He's got to have some sort of fallback plan. Basically, what I'm saying is I'm willing to help if you guys need someone.
Yeah. We have all 30 people that are in it are Friends with Fantasy Benefits contributors.
Yes.
So the fallback is if someone leaves, then – We'll probably replace them with someone who is also a Friends with Fantasy Benefits contributor. So it's kind of like we plan on keeping it around for a long time.
Good. Because that's the hardest part. I love the Dynasty concept. I like it more than a regular concept. It's just so hard to make it keep going. That's the frustrating part.
I think the hardest thing is you have to make sure you have a good commissioner, and that you have – the commissioner chose good owners. It's like, yeah, sometimes people do take on too many leagues and they have to drop out, which is perfectly fine. But I think if you're having like 20% of the league turnover every year, it's not a good sign at all.
Yeah. And that's a good comment you made on the number of leagues. I'm already decided I'm going to really cut that back this year. Cause I say that every year, but I'm really going to do my damnedest this year to do that. Cause it just gets too much, way too much.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling myself. It's November. I can say these things now. Because the problem is I was doing so well last year that I get, hey, would you like to play on this one? Hey. It's like, well, I don't want to tell you no. But yeah, I know it definitely affects the overall stuff.
Yeah, it does. Because it especially like Dynasty Leagues, they take so much time. And you, the one thing I will say is you have to trade. Like, I know some people don't like trading, but you have to trade because someone is going to be trading and someone's going to win the trade and someone's going to lose the trade. And if someone is continuously winning trades, you're behind them.
Yes.
So you have to do it.
And I'm glad you said it, because you have to trade. Trading is essential in a dynasty league. There's no question about that. And even in redraft leagues, I like guys that can trade. It's just people need to start getting the concept through that I'm not going to be able to screw everyone. Like, you can win trades, like you're saying. It can be even 70-30 or something like that. But you can't keep bending someone over and expecting it to work. That's just not realistic to make trades happen. And then it's harder and harder to deal with you in the future. So I wish there was, like, I know I didn't get to go to First Pitch Arizona, and I want to one of these days. I think I need to, like, talk to Brent Hershey or something and go, can you guys start a platform, like, one of your discussion things about the proper etiquette of trading? Because I think I go a long, long way.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I think it's, like, you kind of just have to feel the people out. Some people aren't going to want to trade certain players, and that's fine. That's just – you kind of just have to do it, and – you kind of just have to figure out what they're looking to do and not just send crap offers to people every time. Cause sometimes that just turns people off of you, and they're like, oh, I'm never going to trade with you. So I don't know. I like to keep it just like shoot someone a message. Hey, I see you're doing well in this category, doing bad in this one. I have this guy. What do you think of him? And if they're like, oh yeah, I like him. Well, there you go. You've got your partner right there. Now work it out. But if
I think that's one of the best ways to go about it is start out with just talking to them. Don't throw the offer out right away, because I'd say 99% of the time the offer is going to be definitely favored in your direction, and it's not going to go well sometimes unless the owner understands the concept. So I think that's a great approach, like you said, because I get it even in the football leagues and stuff. I get these trade offers. It's like, why don't you ask me what I need and what I'm interested in trading before you just start throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks.
Oh,
It's just,
football trading is the worst. Like,
I blew up a guy.
God.
I blew up a guy in our league this year. I put it on Twitter. I put it on our fa our message board. We have a league text. I blew him up for the trade offers. Like, he's the
It's just
worst.
well, it's like fantasy football. It's like, hey, I need your running back. You want to trade him to me? It's like, no, I need him.
Yeah,
I also
exactly.
need my running back. There's really no. That's the great thing about Dynasty Baseball too, is like there's so many assets to trade. There's prospects, there's picks, there's MLB players. It's so complex, and you have to learn all of it. And it's the best way to play any fantasy sport, in my opinion. Like
All right, and
there's no second place, close second place to me to Dynasty Baseball.
I agree. I love the dynasty format. Last question I'll ask you, and since you have so many prospects, you're building from the youth up. What do you use as like sources or references to kind of build your repertoire of players that you're looking for?
Yeah, so are you're just talking about prospects or just players in general that I'm
You
looking
could say
for?
in general, but when you're looking at Dynasty, you got to go so much deeper than the average player knows. So where do
Yeah,
you
yeah.
go? What do you use?
For prospects, I mean, the Prospects Live crew is just
Yes.
they're so good. Like they're just crushing it, and Matt Thompson's in the league, so it's kind of unfair that he already has all the info, but yeah, Matt, Ralph, I said Jason Waddell, Jason Panini, Lance Brozdowski. They're all just amazing at what they do. So I get a lot of info from those guys. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so I listen to like the Baseball America one. I listen to the MLB Pipeline one, stuff like that, the Fangraphs one. And then honestly, what I like to do a lot of is I will box score hunt for low minor league players. And then I YouTube those guys to see what they look like in
I like
general,
it.
and then I just kind of put it together, because I mean, I'm not going to be able to go down to where these guys are playing in rookie ball and scout them out or anything. But I like to just get a look at what they're doing, and then I'll read up a little bit on them. And like it one of the guys I got in a ton of dynasty leagues last year just by doing that is Framil Reyes, who
Nice.
actually looks like he's a pretty good asset this year. So I think that's what I do. I just comb through the box scores every week, like just on Fangraphs, just comb through what players are doing, and then I'll put in fab bids on them, depending on, because you got to be kind of aggressive with some of the prospects, because
No
once
doubt.
they actually get any info out on them, they're gone. People are picking them up and spending a ton of fab, and so.
That's why I like your idea of getting low A guys and stuff like that. I go to watch the San Jose Giants. They're the high A for the Giants, and I love it. I sit there and I start watching the other teams and this and that. And I'm looking forward. Helio Ramos should hopefully be there next year. Melvin Adon, who was in the Arizona Fall League that people started watching, I got to see him there. That guy is just a freak. If he just learned command, it'd be amazing. So it's just fun watching these low guys kind of build their way up. And like you said, they're not as talked about, so people don't really know them at that point in time. So definitely one way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Like Wander Franco wouldn't have went high at all in this draft last year, and now you could trade him for anything you want, really. So it's they get a lot of hype, and they gain a lot of value.
Well, awesome stuff, Walter. If we're going to wrap it up right there, I'm curious to see where things finish up. I'm going to keep checking this link every couple days, not every day, but every couple days, and seeing where you guys are ending up here, and maybe we'll chat about it on Twitter or talk again on the podcast, see where it goes, or I'll direct them your guys' way because I'm pretty sure you guys will have more fun discussions over at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. But you can follow him on Twitter at Walter, or The Real Fake Walter. It's Walter McMichael. Thanks for joining me tonight, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. It's always a fun time. I hope to come on again, and we'll talk some redraft before the season starts.
We definitely will. I'm going to crank it up a little earlier than normal. I kind of started in February last year. We'll get going even earlier this year, try to do a lot more. So you will definitely be back on, and we'll get it going. Maybe one episode I'll have you and Paul on at the same time. We'll have the real fake baseball experience on Bench with Bubba.
You guys don't want that. You're not ready for it.
I've had you both on now twice separately. I might have to bring it on the third time's a charm and see how it works.
All right. Yeah, I'll be down. We'll just have to figure out a time it works with Paul. But yeah, you can do the dual guests with us. I think we'll make you laugh at least. That's all I can guarantee.
I'm not doubting that, but we'll see how that goes. But everybody, check me out on Twitter at TheRealFakeWalter, and go check out the guys at FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. Always great stuff over there. And tell Justin Mason, Bubba thinks he's a goofball. But this is Bench with Bubba, episode 131. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.